How much cash should you be holding in your portfolio? Cash allocations are typically held either to manage volatility or as a war chest to seize market opportunities that present themselves. In the context of wealth management, cash provides for income requirements or emergency funds. It can also create valuable breathing space for growth assets. The cash debate is a great example of how advisors provide value to clients. Although it's not always easy to decide whether to invest in cash or not, for long-term investors, all the evidence suggests that investing in cash and cash equivalents is often the best choice. Integrating cash solutions into an investment portfolio provides stability, flexibility, and risk management, enhancing the resilience and effectiveness of the overall investment strategy. But what are some of the risks in fixed income markets? And what should investors keep in mind when choosing a low-risk investment product? To answer these questions, we're joined once again by Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth. Hi, Adrian. This topic of cash and how much you should hold in your portfolio, it's a never-ending debate, isn't it? And of course, it depends very much on where the market is in its cycle. Can you explain the purpose of holding cash? And I guess there could be many reasons for that.
Hi, Kieran, and thanks for having me. I think from our perspective, the purpose of cash, if you look at it from a portfolio management context, there's really two approaches there. On the one end, you might use cash to reduce volatility in the portfolio. So even some of the more conservative fixed income asset classes still exhibit some meaningful levels of volatility over time. So if we think back to what happened with our bonds, for example, when rates started moving up, there were still significant capital losses there. So the coupons are moving higher, but you see immediate capital moves down on your principal. Where in cash's case, the yields are typically quite low. So you've got to be careful, especially if you hold on to it for longer periods, because you're not beating inflation by the time that you subtract management fees and consider taxes and those things. But where it is exceptionally valuable is to manage that volatility. It's one of the few very stable asset classes that you can deploy in a portfolio. So especially for more conservative portfolio managers, it has a useful purpose. Obviously, right now, interest rates are typically a bit higher. So there's value there and the opportunity cost is seen as a bit less. But I think first and foremost, it is a good counterbalance to mitigate any volatility. The other useful thing, and maybe more from a multi-asset manager's perspective, like a typical balance fund, or even for the equity managers who do tend to deploy a bit more cash in their portfolios at time, or are happy to bank profits in the share market and maybe retain a little bit of cash, typically with the view of deploying that to make use of opportunities. And that's really useful in an environment that's typically quite flat and returns aren't necessarily moving forward. But at the same time, there's still a lot of volatility that you can make use of. So potentially being a little bit more active in the portfolio. But in order for you to do that, it helps to have a little bit of additional cash on hand. Next to that is something completely different in the wealth management context. And for where I am, I'm really an asset manager in a wealth management business. But what we see wealth managers do with cash is that obviously they need to provide for short-term cash needs for their clients, but also manage investor behavior. And I think that's actually one of the most valuable areas to deploy cash in a financial planning strategy, because what we've done in our side is really create some breathing space for the growth assets to do what they're supposed to do. So just to give you an example, instead of deploying, for example, for a, say, a conservative client or a client seeking out stable growth, you could typically go into a stable mandate, for example, or a preserver type mandate. Or the alternative is to look at the cash requirements or cash flow requirements from a client. So say, for example, they need some money to pay for a holiday or school fees and that kind of thing over the next 12 to 24 months. And you would provide for that in a money market portfolio, which reduces the stress even on a stable fund. Though, although conservative, typically these still consist a third out of equities. And you don't typically want to take money out of that if there's been short-term pressure in the market. So even in that case, you can leave that portfolio to do what it's supposed to do over a minimum period of 3 years, for example. And that really helps with the client behavior to make sure they don't panic when the market correction is there, worrying about income needs, because they know the income needs are sufficiently catered for in the cash area.
Talk about that in the PSG Wealth context. What do you offer to your clients in the space of cash and cash management?
Yeah, so on the more conservative end of our product set, we have an enhanced interest fund and an income fund solution. But again, we operate a bit differently to the typical asset manager. So if you look at our enhanced interest fund, it's really a money market type portfolio, really ultra conservative. But if we look at our typical financial planning approach, what we would do is say to a client, what are your 12-month needs? And they would say, well, actually, I need an income monthly. And then they find. Now, if you put that in a money market portfolio, that money market portfolio has a limitation in terms of how much duration they can take or the level of interest that they can harness out of money market. So they can't typically invest in longer dated instruments for higher yields. And that's just by virtue of money market regulation. Where if you look at what we did with our enhanced interest fund is we said, well, let's assume you ultimately sit with 12 deposits, each maturing at the end of each of the months from January to December. And if you were to construct a portfolio of 12 securities like that with 12 deposits, what would ultimately be the average maturity? And that would be 200 days. But if you look at a money market fund, they limit it to 90 days. So that means that for that purpose, a money market fund is actually excessively conservative. They're not playing the yield curve far out enough, which means that they're leaving an amount of money or return on the table. And by putting our mandate up for 200 days, we can get a little bit additional return, hence the name enhanced interest. But at the same time, by setting up a specific mandate, we could also write into the mandate that we only use investment grade money market instruments or investment grade issuers. And you would think that money markets are compelled to the same thing, but generally they aren't. They are able to also invest in other things that aren't necessarily investment grade. So by looking at those two things, it's actually a very good example of how we could enhance returns and at the same time reduce risk by just deploying the client's investment or risk budget a little bit more effectively. So that coordination with our partners in the wealth management space is quite useful. And we do similar things in terms of aligning our financial planning philosophy on the wealth management side with what we offer in our portfolios that our advisors use.
You mentioned fixed income products being on the low side of the risk spectrum, but there are some risks, are there not? Maybe just cover that.
Yeah, there are certainly some risks that I think are generally reasonably misunderstood. So I think at a basic level, you should always ask when you enter into the space, if there is something with an enhanced yield, where does that yield come from? And in most cases, I think it could be from duration. So just increasing the duration in the portfolio, as I mentioned. In other cases, it could be from exposing assets to counterparties that are associated with more risk. So going down the issuance rankings and buying into instruments that aren't necessarily such high quality. And that's something that investors should be aware of, especially in this environment where what we see out there is investors are definitely chasing yields. And they're not necessarily considering the risks because the risks are a bit more complex. It's not like the equity market where everything, you know, is sort of approached with a broad brush in terms of equity investing. And in this space, the differences in risks are very meaningful. And you can imagine from, you know, using an instrument that's issued by one of the big banks and it's a secured debt that they issue and pay you a yield for using that debt. In other cases, there might be even private debt. So this is debt that isn't listed on the JSE. It's not freely traded. And you might not even have a daily updated market value that's tested in the market. And therefore, there's some liquidity constraints, some transparency constraints. There might be issues if you wish to liquidate it, if it's not fully liquid. So those are the kind of risks that you need to understand. And typically, the way that the average investor approaches risk is to use the very old school method of looking at return in relation to the volatility of a security. for us, volatility is not really the risk. I think volatility entices the wrong behavior of clients, and therein lies the risk. But volatility itself is not necessarily an indicator of risk. In fact, if you look at the most volatile asset class that we use in equities, it's actually the growth engine of a client's portfolio. So you need to understand what the real risks are, and they don't necessarily exhibit themselves in the volatility of the asset class. In many of those cases, the volatility is actually quite low because of that same risk that there is no liquidity, they're not trading, and therefore they are have low levels of volatility. But if you start to look at if you can trade the paper, then there's issues with liquidity and you struggle to get your money back at fair prices.
So what should investors be considering when choosing a low-risk investment product? If they, for example, feel that the equity market has run too high, is that a chance for them to maybe switch into a fixed income or a cash product, or are there other reasons to do this?
Yeah, so typically from a financial planning perspective, the work that we do with a wealth manager is to say you shouldn't really be trying to time the market to that extent. Ideally, your portfolio should be positioned to consist of sufficient cash that you can meet their short-term liabilities and cash needs. And the rest should really just meet your risk profile more broadly. But if you start to consider that cash component in your portfolio, I think investors are currently looking at it very one-dimensionally in terms of what are the yields, and they're chasing those yields. But I would definitely add the component of risk, as I've mentioned before. And obviously, value for money plays into the space as well, because we know clients are quite cost-sensitive, and they're particularly cost-sensitive when it comes to more conservative products with generally a lower return. So I would say you need to seek to find a solution that is fairly well-balanced across risk, return, and value for money, and not just get distracted by the top performers with very high levels of returns. That's generally paid for in the price of taking on more risk that's not generally understood. So I've mentioned the counterparties and liquidity risks. It should also be mentioned, especially in this environment where we're most likely looking at interest rate cuts coming, these portfolios are also exposed to an element of reinvestment risk. So in other words, as some of the existing assets on the portfolio start to mature, those assets need to be deployed into the market elsewhere. And as rates come down, typically what you can find offers a lower yield than what you had in the portfolio previously. So you need to understand to what extent the portfolio is exposed to that kind of a risk as well. But in terms of what investors should consider, I think really important, I mean, ultimately what I'm saying is don't lose sight of your financial planning goals along the way. Really understand where your growth is coming from. Don't try to be too aggressive in your sleep easy part of your portfolio, the cash component. It's good to try and reduce cost and look for higher yields and optimize things. But I think you know where the line in the sand lies, ultimately, in terms of your own risk appetite. And if things get too complicated where you're not aware of all the risks, then you've most probably gone too far down that spectrum. And the risks are complicated. So ultimately, if you're in a position where you're looking to invest a significant amount of cash, but you're not necessarily that au fait with the various risks that I've mentioned, then seek out the help of a wealth manager that does, and that can give you the suitable advice, in which this environment is a lot more complicated than what is generally believed out there in the market, I would say.
All right, we're going to leave it there. That was Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth.